Okay, I got it. Okay, good morning, everyone. To those who I haven't seen or spoke with thus far, I'd like to call the meeting to order. First item of business is our roll call. And if I could just refer to my script here. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. And just, I'd like to start with roll call. I'm Peter Lisi. Obviously I am in attendance. Benita Brown Eyes.
Bettina, yes, here.
Thank you. Martin Budd.
Here.
Michael Azzotti.
I'm here.
Carrie Kelly.
Present.
Thank you. Julie Savino.
Present.
And Laura Baker.
Laura Baker on behalf of Kelly Valeries.
Thank you. And Jeanette Weldon.
Present.
Jeanette is present. Okay. Also ask that individuals would state their name and title before speaking during the meeting, and votes must be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. In the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or number two, the time the meeting will resume. So with that as our preamble, I would call the meeting to order. And our first item of business are the minutes from our April 4th meeting. And
I'll move their approval as presented.
We've got a motion to accept the minutes as presented. Is there a second?
This is Julie Savino, I'll second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes as presented from our April 4th, 2023 meeting. Are there any comments, discussion? Are there any corrections or edits anyone would like to suggest to those minutes? Anything? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to accept the minutes as presented, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions?
I'd like to abstain.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Carrie Kelly abstaining.
Okay, with one abstention. Thank you, Carrie.
Mike Azzotti abstaining as well.
All right, two abstentions. Mike Azzotti and Carrie Kelly. All right, motion carries. Josh, would you like to introduce our guest speaker, please?
Yes, thanks, Peter. So we're excited to have Justin Drager here. Justin is the president and CEO of the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, also known as NASFA. Justin serves as the primary voice of NASFA and as the liaison between the association members, the U.S. Congress, federal agencies, and the media. Justin has an extensive resume and bio here, but in the essence of time, I'd like to welcome Justin and turn it over to him.
Thanks very much. Can you all see my screen?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, sure. No problem. Thanks for having me. I'm just going to talk for a little bit, and I think all these materials have been provided to you or will be provided to you shortly. I'm not going to go through all the slides, so I've provided a number of slides that are just there for you on background. Was just said, my name is Justin Drager. I'm president of the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. We're located here in Washington, D.C., we represent about 3,000 college and university and trade school financial aid offices across the country. Our membership is very broad. Our members serve 9 out of 10 students that are enrolled in post-secondary education across the United States. The update I'm bringing you today is going to focus on a couple things. The return to student loan repayment that is scheduled to begin this fall. We're going to talk about student loan forgiveness. We'll talk about something called Operation Fresh Start. And then I want to talk about something called FAFSA simplification, which is sort of at top of mind in every financial aid office across the country. And then I provided you a bunch of FYI for your information slides, goings on at the Department of Education and here at NASFA. So let me start quickly by talking a little bit about student loan borrower relief, and more specifically about the repayment pause. Since the beginning of the pandemic, so we are now at year three, federal student loan borrowers have not had to make any student loan payments on their federal student loans. They were started to begin this last winter when the White House announced what they called their final student loan repayment pause extension. That extension was supposed to go through this June or 60 days after we have resolution on whether President Biden's student loan debt forgiveness plan is to go through. So June 30 or sometime in the next 60 days. Because the White House was negotiating with primarily Republicans, but primarily House Republicans on a debt ceiling deal, they reached an agreement that basically said two things in that deal. One, that we would have spending caps on all, on specifically discretionary spending that will impact student aid, specifically Pell Grants, federal work study, supplemental grants. But to this conversation specifically, they also agreed that federal student loan repayment pause extensions would basically cease, that all federal student loan borrowers will in fact begin repayment within 60 days. So somewhere between September and October, borrowers will now, legislatively, will begin making payments on their federal student loans after more than 3 years of a repayment pause. So that's where we are. And the Department of Education did confirm this in a news article to Politico that their intent is that interest will start accruing on September 1 and payments will start being due in October. So that's where we are. And that's pretty big news. Now, lest we all worry, what does that actually mean? Like, does that mean 40 million borrowers will all make a payment, you know, sometime in the month of October? The reality is that there will likely be some sort of long onboarding process. It's probably going to be messy. Borrowers haven't been just sitting on piles of cash in preparation to start making payments. In fact, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau just came out with a report just last week and said up to 20% of all federal student loan borrowers will likely have significant trouble making loan payments when the loan payment system is turned back on because they, quote, have risk factors that suggest that they will struggle making loan payments. That is to say, they are spending all of the money they have on hand. They're not setting aside cash to make loan payments when that payment becomes due this fall. On top of that, student loan servicing companies, the companies that are hired by the department to collect these loans, have largely been facing funding shortages for the last 3 years. So they've been laying off staff. They haven't necessarily been hiring up for this repayment unfreeze. And so there are pretty significant obstacles in turning back on the repayment machine. This is a wonky policy slide, but in short, this is what we're saying. Schools, colleges, and universities are held responsible for the number of borrowers that don't repay their loans. If a student goes into student loan default, meaning they go 270 days without making a payment within the first 3 years of going into repayment, then that is counted against the institution. And then if enough borrowers do it, the school will lose Title IV eligibility. That means they can't offer Pell Grants, they can't offer federal work study, they can't offer federal student loans. The department has basically said that there won't be, because they've paused student loans for 3 years, all of those borrowers won't be in one mega cohort and count against a school. Borrowers have been, quote unquote, going into repayment cohorts all along the way. That's good news for schools. But still, even if we segment out different cohorts of borrowers when they've been graduating or leaving school, schools are going to have a pretty monumental task on their hands as they try to reach out to their borrowers and help them navigate this entire system. For NASFA's part, I'll just let you know where we're at. We've been trying to prep schools and give them toolkits and communications that they can use to reach out and help borrowers at their institutions prepare for repayment. Let's talk about debt forgiveness. Last fall, President Joe Biden proposed that borrowers and families making less than $125,000 or $250,000, if you're from a household, would qualify for somewhere between $10,000 or up to $20,000 in student loan forgiveness. I'm going to spare you the blow-by-blow political machinations that have been going on and just say right now, everything rests with the Supreme Court. And we expect a decision out of the Supreme Court as to whether the president has or doesn't have this authority to cancel this amount of student loan debt in the next week. And at that point, whether it's this Thursday, Friday, or next week, the Supreme Court will rule whether the president has the authority to unilaterally, with pre-authorized congressional authority, whether the president can unilaterally cancel the student loan debt of millions of borrowers. Whether that authority is granted or not, it doesn't do anything for current and future borrowers. This is all retroactive authority that the president would be using, but it is a huge boon to pre-existing borrowers. Doesn't do anything for future borrowers. And as you can guess, pretty stark divide between Republicans and Democrats. One other thing I wanted to mention, the administration has also given to all pre-existing student, not all, but most pre-existing student loan defaulters a fresh start. And the White House has called this Operation Fresh Start. And it's basically said that if you hold one of these loans over on the left-hand side of this chart, they have brought you current so that you are no longer in student loan default and you can start over and you can have a fresh start. This basically allows borrowers to have their loan default status removed. They regain status to all Title IV student aid programs. They can start their programs over at their institutions and basically allows them to complete their educations. Since most student loan defaulters are withdrawn students who did not complete their educations. So this is a big win for borrowers who dropped out of school, went almost 300 days without completing their educations and defaulted on their student loans. This is a temporary program that will expire 1 year after the resumption of student loan repayment. So this will expire in the fall of 2024. And the final thing that I wanted to mention, just in terms of what's going on in the universe of federal student aid and financial aid offices. On the right there is Senator Lamar Alexander. He's since retired from the United States Senate, a senator who was both who served as the chairman and then ranking member of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee from the state of Tennessee. Someone who genuinely worked at bipartisan legislation. And in December of 2020, before he retired, worked towards a single piece of legislation that was meant to simplify the form that students have to complete in order to qualify for federal student aid. That is colloquially called the FAFSA, or the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. Now, if any of you have experience filling out a FAFSA or helping students fill out a FAFSA, or if you filled out a FAFSA for yourself or your children or grandchildren, you know that sometimes the bark is bigger than the bite. The FAFSA can be pretty easy for some students, but complicated for others. And it did generate a significant amount of concern for some students and families. The FAFSA and underlying the form is a whole slew of federal methodology calculations The FAFSA is undergoing its largest changes in its 30 year history. The FAFSA came around in the late 90s. If we were to go around and ask every financial aid office, what is the one thing that's keeping you up at night? Most cited would be the changes to the FAFSA. This form is the gateway to all federal student aid. It's often the gateway to all outside scholarships. And I can't speak for your state, but it's often also the gateway for most state aid. The FAFSA is going through massive changes for the 24-25 year. The department says it'll be live in December. So I'm going to leave it there. Those are the big changes coming to federal student aid and financial aid this year. And I'm happy to stick around for as long as you'd like and answer any questions.
Justin, this is Peter Lisi, CHESA board member. I have a question on one of your final comments there. You said that if there's one thing that keeps financial aid administrators up at night, it's the revamping of the FAFSA form. Maybe I just misunderstood your comment, but I would think those financial aid administrators would be rejoicing at the revamping of the form. What's keeping them up at night? Are they concerned about what the final version is going to look like? I would think that people would be very happy that form is going to get a revamping and a revision.
I think they're optimistic about the changes in the form that could be easier for students and families, Peter. But form follows function, and the department hasn't released a very specific model that would tell schools exactly which students will qualify differently for what financial aid.
Okay.
So schools will struggle to know exactly how this might change student eligibility for all students. Now, for most students, it shouldn't change much at all. But on the other side of this, there will be more students that qualify for Pell Grants. That will change institutional scholarships. If one of their criteria is Pell eligibility, it might change state scholarship criteria. Yeah. So for modeling purposes, it changes. The other thing, Peter, I would say is usually the department releases the FAFSA on October 1. This year, they've said it's not going to be available to December. So we're already facing a delay.
Yeah.
And we don't know if that's December 1 or December 24 or December 30 at this point. So that's causing a lot of stress.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you.
One follow up. We have on our board Julie, who's on the screen right now. I'd be interested in her views on this subject.
I'm with Justin. This has kept me up for quite some time. And in fact, I am worried about some populations of students. While simplification is taking place, its integration with some of the systems that have complicated technology, I think will prohibit some of the students' access, those who need it the most, because of the complications and the way they have to now present it to their families, which is by invitation. It's you know, by virtue of simplification, they have actually complicated, I think, what financial aid officers believe are some of the functions. I think in the functions and in the need analysis, there's been some things that are eliminated that actually give ease to implement aid to students. So, for example, they're eliminating housing options. So we're going to be challenged to now implement other ways in which we have to collect information to administer a cost of education for a student. There's a whole series of things. I mean, Justin touched upon the most critical, but there's several. As a state, Connecticut, we use the FAFSA. It is going to complicate things for us to administer our state programs here as well. Does the new SAI translate exactly back to an EFC? We're not so quite sure it's going to do that. So it is going to complicate things for us here in the state of Connecticut in the way in which we administer our grant programs. So, this is This is not something that, you know, it does keep us up at night. I think we've all been prepared. We're looking for ways in which we can make sure that our students are looking for information earlier rather than later. It's going to it is going to complicate things for admissions, for institutions, for students who want to know things earlier. Because like Justin said, are we looking at December 1st or December 31st? I mean, statute has it has to be out by January 1. So are they going to go exactly by statute? Could very well be as well. So, you know, I mean, I have concerns.
Okay. Very interesting.
Justin, this is Tim Webb with Hilltop Securities. Yesterday or the day before, I saw an article that referenced the Biden administration having another methodology to forgive $10,000, even if the Supreme Court strikes down the current thought. Do you have any idea what the Biden administration is thinking or how they're going to try to implement that, even if the Supreme Court strikes down their current attempt?
I'm always very careful not to speak for any administration or what they're thinking on any given day. But I do know that this is one of their top priorities. The President Biden in particular said that, I'll just remind you, when the president was running, he questioned himself whether the executive branch had this authority. And when they went down this road, they used limited authority because of the pandemic. So the authority that they relied on was emergency authority that was temporarily granted. This is different authority than what Democratic lawmakers in the Senate argued. Democratic lawmakers, specifically Senators Warren and Schumer, argued that the Higher Education Act already granted the secretary authority to just grant debt forgiveness because the secretary had the authority to change the terms and conditions of any loan, regardless of any emergency. President Biden has never made that argument or tapped into that sort of line of reasoning. Now, whether they might change their thinking and use that line of reasoning on the other side of a SCOTUS defeat, I don't know. But that argument has already been made by some lawmakers on Capitol Hill. So I'm going to be very careful. I don't speak for the administration, and I wouldn't dare to predict where they might go next. But the authority that they've argued today is that it's limited authority because of the pandemic emergency, and that's the authority that they're using for this debt forgiveness.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Justin. Anyone else?
This is Josh. I would just like to thank Justin for taking the time. The Absolutely. Presentation was excellent and very informative as always.
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Second that, Josh. Thank you. Thank you, Justin, very much.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Take care. Thanks, Justin.
Good to see you, Julie. Okay.
Take care. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay, Josh or Jeanette, whoever was responsible for arranging Justin, thank you. I found
that
it very
was Josh.
Yeah, it was very interesting. So thank you.
Yeah, he's an incredible individual, I must say. And NASFA has been very supportive, and they've been very good to Connecticut to try to help inform our aid administrators. Regarding this, because there are some significant concerns of the things that are going forward right now.
Okay. Well, Josh, thanks again for getting that arranged.
Yeah. Thank you, Josh.
Yep. Well done. Okay, Tim, sales report. Do we have Tim Webb?
Yes, sorry, I was on mute. Good morning, everybody. This will be a quick report on the 2023 issuance of the student loan bonds. As normal, we start shortly after the new year. We work with Josh and Jeanette to come up with an estimation of how many funds or what's the total amount of money that is necessary to meet the upcoming academic year's loan volume. So I'm working with Josh and Jeanette, who came up with a need to generate approximately $23 million worth of funding portion of that money would be utilized to reimburse the authority for loans that have already been made. If you recall, earlier in the year, I think it may have been in the November board meeting, maybe I could be corrected, of 22, that an inducement resolution was passed by the board that would allow the authority to reimburse itself with bond proceeds for loans that are originated prior to the bonds being issued. So that goes into the calculus and we start working on the transaction. The transaction was brought to market in April. This is a little bit of a different timing than we've done in the past. In the past, we've worked on issuing the bonds on or about the date that the PLUS loan is reset. Just as a reminder, the PLUS loan is reset at the last 10-year T-note auction in May. This year, that was May 10th. The rate actually takes effect in July, but the rate is known as of that reset date, which was May 10th. Coming up to May 10th, there were a lot of things going on in the market that were unsettling. We were seeing wild fluctuations in the MMD, the Municipal Market Data Index, which is used to price CHESLA's bonds and other municipal securities, as well as the Treasury curves. They were moving up and down as a result of inflation, news, events that occurred with regard to the failure of SVB Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank. And there were some concerns that we could see the interest rate markets move northward. Particular concern was the FOMC meeting that was scheduled to occur and did occur on the 2nd of May. So working with the underwriter, B of A Securities and Blaylock, their co, and then with our desk at Hilltop Securities, our underwriters, we made the decision to price early to go the week of April 26th, our actual date of April 26th. So that's when we priced the bonds. The bonds are structured very similarly to what we've done in the past with regard to the various redemption features. We structured maturities from 2025 through 39, 25 through 32 were non-callable or locked out bonds. Those bonds could not be called until their actual maturity date. And then the bonds from 33 to 39 are callable with excess revenues. Those bonds are structured really to soak up any kind of prepayments that come in off of the loan. So as loan revenue comes in, excess revenue can be utilized to take out those bonds. I believe that there was a document that was sent around that has a couple of charts in it. The first chart on that document shows the maturities. There it is right there on the left side. The preliminary amounts of the par amounts of the bonds by maturity. And then this was the order flow that came in during the order period. So we did have a little bit of retail orders from Connecticut, $3.8 million, a little bit of national retail for a total of $4.3 million of the total issuance that were going to retail. And then there you see the institutionals. So on the whole, the subscription was very nice. We had 2.9 times. Some of the maturities around 30, 31, 32 were not particularly well oversold, but at least one times. But most of them were greater than one. And then over on the far end, the longest maturities, 37, 38, 39, we saw some pretty significant oversubscription. So based on those subscription volumes, again, working with B of A and the co-manager, as well as our desk, there was a decision to reprice those bonds and make some adjustments. If you can go down to the next chart. So here is the next chart shows the preliminary scale there in the middle, and then the final yields associated with this after we made the adjustments. On the very right-hand side, you'll see that we made adjustments of 2 basis points in 25 out to 8 basis points in 38 and 39. And the negative indicates that those were improvements in yield, lowering in yield, improving the cost of funds for the authority. What this worked out to is to allow the authority to provide a loan rate based on these cost of funds of a 635. The plus loan that was set on the 10th of May will be an 805 moving forward. So you have a spread of 170 basis points between the Chesla loan and your primary competitor, which is the plus loan. To put that in perspective, last year we had a very, very nice spread of 205, the year before 169, the year before that 45 basis points, and the year before that 193. So we're within the range of what we've seen. It was a difficult time to be pricing bonds in the market, but I think it came out pretty well. One of the things that I wanted to touch base on is, you know, how does that rate compare with what we're seeing other issuers? So I did a little bit of analysis, checked with some of the folks that are out there. New Jersey offers three different programs, but they're based on their option one is a P&I immediate 10-year repayment. They're at a 569. An interest only 15 years of 589. And then their deferred 20-year product is at a 749. FIA, their program's relatively new. I don't remember if this is their second or their third issuance. Their loans run from a 382 out to a 943. Now, what's different about FIA is that they have a 5-year term, a 10-year term, and a 15-year term, as well as P&I, immediate repay, interest only, or deferred. So that very low rate of 382 would be associated with a 5-year repayment term, immediate principal and interest. Maine did a deal earlier this year. They're at a 624 for P&I 10-year, 724 for 15-year interest only, 799 for a deferred 15-year. VSAC, Vermont, anywhere from a 470 to a 641 immediate P&I, 663 to 783 interest only, and then north of 7% for the deferred loan. And then RISLA, they've changed their program a little bit. I believe they're going with credit-based pricing, and their credit-based pricing on a 10-year immediate repay is anywhere from below 5 to an 845. And for a 15-year deferred, 599 to 899. Now, one other data point that I wanted to provide, since I know that not everybody is going to get a not-for-profit funded loan in the state of Connecticut. I received a document, it was actually to my daughter, for a loan from Discover. And their fixed rate loan right now ranges from a 624 to a 1599.
Wow.
Depending upon your credit quality. And we also took a look at Sallie Mae, did a transaction in May. It was a very large transaction, a $2.2 billion securitization. The average, the weighted average rate of the portfolio included in that was an 11.2%. The weighted average fixed rate was 9.88%. And they have a significant portion of variable rate loans. And the variable rate loans that are tied to SOFR, which is the new index that everyone is will be utilizing, their margin is an 8.21%. That's the margin. So you have the rate set to SOFR plus the margin. But imagine that. They have $2.2 billion financing with the weighted average rate of 11.2%.
Wow. Okay.
So I'd like to say we did well. I think folks that came on or about the date plus reset occurred on May 10th, they had rates that were very similar to ours. If we had waited a little bit longer, I think the interest rate markets moved a little bit away from folks and they did not price as well. But we're happy with where this came out. Hopefully Josh and Jeanette will be able to utilize those funds appropriately. I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Tim?
Anything? I'd just like to mention, it was a very successful sale. And as Tim mentioned, some challenging market conditions, and certainly want to acknowledge the hard work of the Bank of America, the B of A team, as well as Tim's hard work, and also Pullman and Conley, Sandy Dawson, in pulling the transaction together. And of course, Josh, who did a lot of data gathering in connection with the official statement.
One other thing I may just mention is that incorporated in the letter, at the back of the letter, there are three additional charts. It will show where Tesla priced, what the index was at the point, and then what the spread to the index was. So it'll give you a little bit of an indication of how Tesla priced compared to other usual suspects that come in the spring of each year.
Okay. And no, thank you, Tim. Anything else for Tim?
No, but on behalf of B of A, I just would like to thank Tesla for the opportunity. It was, as no other additional comments, I think Tim did a great job describing the market and the transaction. We were pleased to bring, a good amount of retail back. I think that's a little bit due to the higher interest rates, the environment that we're in right now. But, glad that our sales force is able to bring that and the oversubscription that allowed us to lower rates. So we are we're pleased with the transaction. Always a pleasure working with this group. Thank you again.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, moving on, Yesenia and Josh, you gonna walk us through the scholarship memo, please?
Yeah, Yesenia is gonna handle it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yesenia. I'm the program coordinator here at Tesla. So I'll be going over the scholarship memo, starting off with the summary of the memo. Just a reminder, at our January 26th meeting, the Tesla board approved $465,000 in scholarships for students pursuing undergraduate degrees in Connecticut. As of June 2nd, the Tesla scholarship account had $31,000 in unused proceeds from schools and earned interest from prior years. So in this meeting, we'll be seeking approval to award 168 scholarships totaling $486,000. This memo will give you a review of the program's process, the results, and takeaways, and recipients will be notified of the awards in June, so late June. Here's an overview of the 23-24 undergraduate degree scholarship program. Key numbers here would be that we had 207 applications that qualified and 168 scholarship recipients, and that is total funding of $486,000. So the program structure didn't change much from prior years. We offer the Tesla scholarship directly to students who plan to enroll in an undergraduate degree program in Connecticut institutions. The scholarship application was made available on the Tesla website on March 1st. We notified high school counselors, financial aid officers, and the State Department of Education was advised of its availability. The scholarship program information was also posted on our Tesla social media outlets, and applications and supporting documents were submitted through our management system, Fondit, and the application deadline was May 1st. So through Fondit, applicants were required to upload all documents before submitting their application. They also had to provide an email of a third-party recommender, and the recommender uploaded a letter recommendation directly to us. As applications were received, Tesla staff did an assessment of the applications to make sure all documents uploaded were correct documents. And if they weren't, students were contacted prior to the deadline to make sure they submitted the correct documents. And then third-party recommenders were also received reminders on a weekly basis to submit that before the deadline. An internal Tesla scholarship committee was formed and consisted of Jeanette Weldon, Josh Herlock, Shannon Reynolds, and I. So after we, the committee reviewed all of the qualifying applications individually, and we scored them independently, and then scoring totals of all the committee members were sorted on a consensus ranking list. And that's where we came up with the 168 recipients. The eligibility requirements did not change from prior years. So students had to be residents of Connecticut, attending Connecticut institutions in this academic year, 23-24 academic year, enrolling at least half time, the expected family contribution of 7,000 or less, minimum cumulative GPA of 2.5, and not be in default of any chosen loan.
Yeah, and Yesenia, if I can just jump in here, one point I wanted to mention regarding the criteria is we have always tied the expected family contribution to the Pell Grant eligible EFC from the FAFSA. So that Pell Grant eligible EFC in prior years has been 6,000. We updated that this year to 7,000 because of that change to the Pell Grant eligible EFC at the federal level. So that was just the one minor change there to keep in line with prior years.
Right. Thanks, Josh. So again, for prior years, our award amounts did not change. For full-time students, they will receive $3,000, and part-time students will receive $1,500. Disbursements will be made payable directly to the school, and the schools will are instructed to return the funds if the students are not attending at the full-time or part-time level. We do verify each student's enrollment status before disbursement, and we expect to inform the students of their award in June or end of June to July, and then disbursement would happen in September. Moving on to our data analysis. So we did an analysis on our qualified applicants as well as our recipients. You will see that in the board package, Exhibit A and B includes the data for the qualified applicants, which would include race, gender, age group, grade classifications, institutions, their home city or town, and their attendance status. And then Exhibit C and D include the same data breakout for only the 168 recipients. The data shows a broad distribution of applicants across the state, so representing 68 towns and cities. And the applicants will be attending 21 of the 34 Connecticut institutions. Can you move on to the next page? So although the applicant data shows that it was very broad, we did notice that most of the applicants, or 73%, were female, which is very, which makes sense based off of previous years. And the awardees represent 63 towns and 20 institutions with a similar racial and gender distribution. And just a quick reminder, the scholarship application for healthcare and manufacturing certificate programs opens on July 1st. And at our January 26th meeting, the CHESLA board approved $35,000 for this program, and funds will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. Any applicants who meet the criteria, will receive a certificate program scholarship until funds run out, and the award for this scholarship is $1,250 per student. Did anyone have any questions?
Any questions for Yesenia?
Yes, I had a question. You mentioned $425,000 number with respect to the scholarships. Is that correct?
$465,000.
Yeah. Yes, so Marty, the board approved an allocation for this undergrad program of $465,000 at the January meeting. Because we have some unused proceeds in the scholarship account, we're coming back to the board now for a new allocation to approve 486,000 across 168 recipients. So essentially to use 21,000 of the 31,000 that's currently unused in the scholarship account.
And then for the certificates, what, they're 35,000?
The allocation is 35,000, and that opens on July 1st. And that's, as Yesenia said, $1,250 per recipient for that program.
Okay, but that 35,000 is part of the 480 or whatever that number is. Is that correct?
No. So if you recall, we received $500,000, $500,000 from CSLF annually.
Right.
So the board allocated 465 of that to undergrad and 35,000 of that to certificate.
I see.
And then beyond that 500,000, we're proposing here to basically award an additional 21,000 for the undergraduate program because we have unused proceeds in the scholarship account.
Thank you very much for clarifying.
Yep, no problem.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. So, Jeanette or Josh, you're looking for a vote on this, correct?
Yes, please. We would like board approval for the 168 recipients for $486,000.
I'm happy to move that.
All right. We've got a motion to accept staff's recommendation to the scholarship program. Is there a second?
Laura Baker seconds.
Thank you, Laura. So it's been moved and seconded to accept staff's recommendation as it's outlined in the memo for the scholarship program. Are there any further questions or comments? Any discussion at all? Any questions for Josh, Senia, or Jeanette?
I just want to add one point. I wanted to acknowledge the efforts of Yesenia, who takes on the main role of administering the scholarship program, reaching back out to the applicants, et cetera. So, thank you, Yesenia, for the hard work.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor of accepting, all those in favor of the motion to accept the staff's recommendation on the scholarship program, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you all. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Yesenia, Josh, and Jeanette. Denise, the refi program amendment.
Yes, thanks, Peter. Okay, the staff is proposing amendments to the refi program manual. Currently, interest that accrues during a hardship or military forbearance is capitalized, added to the principal balance of the loan at the end of the forbearance period. Capitalizing interest results in charging interest on interest and results in an additional financial charge for a borrower who has had to take a forbearance for either hardship or military service. So for this reason, we are proposing a change in policy and eliminating the capitalization of interest accrued during a forbearance period and instead amortizing such interest over loan's remaining repayment period. The proposed amendments are shown on pages 20 and 21 of the board package. Kara, if you could pull that up, page 20. The amendment would essentially state that interest accrued will be amortized over the remaining months of the repayment period and the definition of hardship and military forbearance. Happy to answer any questions. There's a board resolution on page 18 of the board package to approve the amendments.
I move that resolution, Marty Budd.
Right. Motion's been made to accept the staff's recommendation for the amendments on the refi program. Is there a second?
Laura Baker seconds for you, Peter.
Thank you, Laura. So it's been moved and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on the amendments for the refi program. Any further questions or discussion? Any comments? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of accepting staff's recommendation for the refi program manual as stated, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Wonderful. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Denise. And Denise, I think we're still with you on the new inducement resolution.
Right. So, okay, it's up on the screen. So if you recall, in March, CSLF authorized a contribution of $2,250,000 for the REFI program and $750,000 for either the in-school or REFI program. The resolution on the screen authorizes the authority to reimburse itself up to those $3 million that are used to originate authority loans from future bond issuances. So the resolution is there for board consideration. Happy to answer any questions.
Marty, but this is not for the current bond issue and the current revenues, because last year we approved taking out $2 million. This is for our bond issue in 2024. Is that correct?
It would be for future bond issuances, right? It could either be for 2024 or any other future bond issuance.
Right. Thank you. I'll move the inducement resolution.
Thank you, Marty. It's been moved. Is there a second?
This is Julie Savino. I'll second.
Thank you, Julie. All right. Motion's been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on the inducement resolution. Are there any further questions for Denise or Jeanette or anyone? Further questions or comments? Anyone? All right. Hearing none, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor of adopting the inducement resolution as presented in the board packet, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you all. Motion carries unanimously. Well done. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
Carly, would you like to talk to us about our financials?
Thank you. This is Carly Levin. I just wanted to point out on page 25 of your packet, which is on the screen currently, under assets under investments, you'll notice that the board designated account is under $1 million. I did notify the trustee and they corrected that transfer error on in April. They just transferred the wrong interest amount from that account into the operating account. So that has been fixed. The next page 26.
Carly, I had a couple of questions on that page.
Sure.
One, how did the board designated amount, you know, decrease by a couple of dollars? It looks weird to me.
Well, normally the interest comes in and it gets transferred to up to the unrestricted account. They just happen to transfer the wrong amount in March. So that's how we ended up under the $1 million that we normally see every quarter.
Right. So that'll be correct.
That was corrected in April.
Next question. You mentioned this to Jeanette earlier. It shows that we have unrestricted funds of $2,500,000 roughly, and that we'll get more if we withdraw from this bond fund money for the loans that we originated from our balance sheet. And I thought management ought to present to the board, we have an operating budget, what I would call at least a discussion of our balance sheet excess monies, which might be $3-5 million, what the thought was there, whether it would go to refi, whether it would cover deficits and so forth. And so I've asked Jeanette at our September meeting, in addition, to add a kind of capital budget or capital thoughts about how we use our capital in the future, because I think the board should focus on the amount of cash unrestricted we have on our balance sheet and how it should be used.
So yes, Marty, we did talk about that, and I think it's a great suggestion. And so that is something we'll put on the agenda for the September board meeting.
Thank you.
Okay.
So page 26, this is the agency's operating income statement, sorry. So for the 9 months ending March 31st, 2023, revenues over expenses before non-operating income and expenses were $339,602. Revenues over expenses after non-operating income and expenses were $394,584. The total year-to-date revenues were $18,305 over budget, and the total year-to-date expenses were $41,214 under budget. I'm going to move on to page 31, unless there are questions regarding the agency.
Yeah.
And we'll take a look at...
I'm looking at non-current assets on page 29, Marty Budd. These show a very high amount of $118,000. These are bond fund numbers. In other words,
Marty, what page are you on?
Page 29. At the bottom, it shows non-current assets.
Oh, I see it. Yep.
This is the 2019 resolution. It means there's $118 million loans. Is that what they primarily are? In school loans, future loans that are not due now that we're just holding until they come due. Is that right?
Right. Students are making payments on those loans. They've all been dispersed. The amounts, you have some in the current and some, the majority of it in the non-current portion.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So on page 31, the total change in net position for the 2019 resolution is an increase of $147,655. I did want to make note that on May 15th in the 2019 A bond series, we did use $260,000 of excess revenues to redeem additional bonds. I'll move on to the other programs unless there are other questions regarding the 2019 resolution. Page 34, please.
I have a question on 33.
Okay.
Shows on the refi Connecticut $968,000 unrestricted. Is that money we can use for refi loans?
Hold on, let me check. Let me get to my page.
Net position unrestricted under refi.
Right. That makes up what is in our revenue account. If you look on page 32, actually, it'll break out that dollar amount for you. At the top under unrestricted assets, it breaks out the $968,000. So we have $339,000 in our revenue account, then we have our current portion of loans receivable and then interest receivable on loans. So that's what makes up that $968,000.
So we have $340,000 available for refi loans. Is that correct?
If that's how I wanted to use that, correct.
And then under the ADTLSF, there are $10,000 that we haven't put out.
That's just revenue that we've received. As far as what's in the loan fund that we have not sent out yet, that would be under loan fund. So it's down a little bit lower. It's $6,518,000.
Right. Now, is that money we have gotten from the state? Where did we get that
money? It was from the state.
Right. So we have a lot of money to put out for Lyons District.
Yeah, that program's been slow. Continuing to market the program through SDE, et cetera. But yeah, you're correct. We've only sent out about 500,000 as of March 31st.
Yeah, we have 6 million. That's rather interesting.
Right.
All right, so just got to keep going.
Yep. Okay, Carly, anything else?
I was just going to touch base on page 34 quickly. And we did add another column for our other program, our in-school non-trust, and now we have four other programs within there. I don't know if anyone has any questions regarding that. We did transfer $2 million from the Refi CT loan fund into the non-trust, in-school non-trust of $2 million. You'll see that on the transfers there. If anyone has questions, I don't want to take up more time. I do have one other thing I did need to mention, however, or write-off. So for fiscal 2023, our student write-off this year, we're going to be writing off $797,000 in in-school loans. We do not have any refi loans that we'll be writing off. That is higher than what we wrote off last year. Last year, we wrote off $653,000. We are receiving recoveries from our collection agency. This year, we received about $60,000 up through May 31st. Last year, we only received about $30,000. So we've received about twice what we did last year for recoveries. The agency, collection agency, will continue to reach out to borrowers to try and receive our funds. But as far as an accounting aspect, we have to do write-offs each year, so that's why we are writing those off. And the write-off amount and recovery amount do go into our allowance for loan loss calculation that we will be doing at the end of the fiscal year. So that'll get factored into that. If there are any questions regarding that, I am all set then. Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, a couple of reports. Jeanette, did you want to start with the authority report?
First, I just wanted to briefly mention the loan yield liability on the Series 2013A bonds that we spoke about previously, and principal loan forgiveness to offset the liability. So that has been achieved. We have the final analysis from BLX. No payment is due to the IRS. And so the objective was achieved there. And I want to thank Josh for all of his hard work on making sure that the forgiveness information was properly disseminated and processed by the loan servicer.
And just to chime in there, as a reminder, we forgave $200,000 of principal for the 2013A series in February, and then another $90,000 for the 2013A again in April to accomplish that.
Right, and we just got the final number, the final report from BLX again, saying there's no payment due to the IRS. And then I wanted to turn it over to Dan Gingy, who is our legislative liaison, to give an update on what transpired in the legislative session in regard to CHESLA.
Thanks, Jeanette. So while CHESLA didn't have any legislative proposals that it was actively pursuing this session, there were a number of proposals that were introduced primarily in the higher education and banking committees that impacted CHESLA. The most notable group of proposals focused on providing an interest rate subsidy on CHESLA loans for particular professions. These included paraprofessionals and counselors in alliance districts, police officers in distressed municipalities, and nursing and mental health care professionals, as well as EMS personnel. In the last few days of session, what happened was there was a strike-all amendment to a bill in the House of Representatives. It was House Bill 5441. And that amendment combined the proposal to establish a student loan subsidy program for police officers and distressed municipalities. And it also included language that expands the current Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program to include paraprofessionals and counselors. the effective date of the expansion of the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program is noted as January 1st, 2024 in the legislation. There's already funding in place because it was the intent of the proponents of the legislation to use the existing bond funding that has already been authorized by the State Bond Commission to initially seed and administer the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program for teachers. That same pot of funding will now be used to also provide the same benefit to paraprofessionals and counselors in Alliance districts.
What's a paraprofessional?
I believe a paraprofessional acts in a capacity, a capacity similar to a teacher's aide.
Thank you. And I take it what we're talking about is the $6 million that we already received, not used very much of it. Now that $6 million will be used, if the law goes into effect, for these other subsidies. Is that correct? Or is there going to be another bond issue add to the $6 million?
No, Marty, you are correct. So that'll help us get more of those dollars out the door with the expansion.
Thank you.
In addition to the expansion of the Alliance District program, the amendment, as I mentioned, also included language establishing a loan subsidy program for police officers in distressed municipalities. The effective date noted in the legislation for that particular program is also January 1st, 2024. However, there is no funding that was included as part of the bond bill, and there was no other funding source identified. Until that occurs, we're not going to begin designing that program because it's unclear as to whether or not there will actually be the required funding in place to seed it and administer it. There was a second piece of legislation that also passed. It was House Bill 6689, and this creates a loan subsidy program for mental health care and nursing professionals, as well as EMS personnel. The effective date for this particular program is July 1st, 2023. There was an allocation of bonding included in the bond bill that was voted on and passed by the legislature. However, the $10 million that was included in that legislation still requires final action from the State Bond Commission. At this point, it's unclear as to whether or not the Bond Commission will authorize that funding. And so in a similar way to the program for police officers, we are not going to begin designing that program until the funding required to seed it and administer it is actually in place. But given the large number of proposals that were introduced and the handful that passed this session, we are going to be working in the interim with legislative leadership to see if there is a way we can combine, to begin at least, the healthcare professional proposal and police officer proposal into a single program that can be used as a mechanism in the out years to provide the same type of benefit to other professions, because I think from an administration standpoint, it makes much more sense to have a single mechanism that can be adjusted over time to accommodate different occupations, as opposed to having a variety of different programs and funding sources for each individual occupation. The last item I wanted to touch on is House Bill 5233. This was a proposal that was introduced in the Higher Education Committee. It did get voted out of committee. It would have required CHESLA to establish an income-driven repayment plan for borrowers who hold CHESLA loans. However, there was no action taken on this proposal by the House prior to adjournment, and this legislation effectively died on the floor of the House. Thank you.
I had a question. In each case where you've talked about House bills and their effective date, they have been passed by the legislature and signed, so they are law?
Yes, yeah, so they have passed in concurrence, both the House and the Senate, and they're awaiting signature by the governor.
Thank you. And also, in the Alliance program on the $6 million that we already have, we take out an administrative fee because I heard you say that there's money there also for the administration of these programs. I don't know, Jeanette, do we take when we make Alliance loans or subsidies, do we take out a fee?
So the approach we're using is we are, booking time against, to the extent staff is working on the Alliance program, then we're tracking that time. And similar to support services almost, we are then assessing the, reimbursing, so to speak, the cost of that time.
So we've taken some money out.
Yes, yes.
Thank you very much.
And the other thing I just wanted to mention, in the course of the legislative session, we did have the opportunity to collaborate quite a bit. Dan did a lot of work with the Office of Workforce Strategy. There were some pieces, some bills that originally referenced both OWS and CHESLA to create programs associated with high value professions, which would be identified by OWS. So just wanted to mention, that's kind of, even though there's no bill specific to that in this session, we certainly expect that collaboration to continue. And I think the fact that, OWS is represented on the CHESLA board, makes it all the more, logical that we would work together as those things come up. So that is all I had for my report. And then I'll turn it to Josh for his segment.
Just before we get to that, I have a quick question for Dan. Dan, your last comment there, you mentioned someone had raised the bill for the income-based repayment. Do you recall who that was, who sponsored that?
It was Representative Gary Turco from Newington.
From where?
From Newington.
Newington. Huh. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, Josh, let's do a quick review of the portfolio, please.
So I'll be quick. We'll start on page 39 of the board package. The in-school loan program disbursed about $9.9 million for the third quarter. As you can see, after two down loan volume years, CHESLA is expected to be back around the $20 million loan volume threshold for fiscal 23. So good news there. I then want to skip forward to page 43. This is our refinance program. We disbursed $2.2 million for refi. As you can see, this was our highest quarter ever, in large part due to our below market and low loan rates at the time, which ranged from 3.75% to 4.99%. So the year-to-date refinance volume represents a $2.5 million increase, or 126%, over the fiscal 23 levels. Due to the significant increase in volume, you will recall that we, and due to limited proceeds available, we closed the refinance applications on March 7th. That application was then reopened on May 16th with new rates that are more in line with the market. The refinance rates currently range from 4.99% fixed to 7.99% fixed. And we are seeing applications come in. I then like to move to page, I'm gonna go all the way to page 54. I wanted to talk about page 54, our performance dashboard, talk about our loan servicer UAS. So you will note that UAS has not met performance standards over the last 4 months. I've been in contact with UAS, and they're actively working to address the issue. Some of their ways to manage the issue and correct the servicing levels are that they hired a new highly experienced manager in March. UAS hired seven new agents in April, And they're also focusing on leveraging the expertise of their parent company, TSI, rather than hire new individuals externally. They're now focusing on leveraging the parent company to then hire internally to fill some of those slots. The service levels are expected to normalize here in June. And as always, I'll continue to keep an eye on this with UAS. And I have weekly calls with them as well. And then lastly, I just wanted to touch on page 55 and 56. Campus Doors performance for the quarter for both in-school and in refi. The Campus Door met the standards for the quarter. So no concerns there. So that's my quick update. Are there any questions?
Josh, Marty, Bud. I was looking. I can't find because my pages got mixed up. The chart, what page shows originations in the in-school loan compared to the projections?
You mean the comparison to the cash flow assumptions?
Yes.
That's just the comparison to the 2022B portfolio proceeds. But all those proceeds have been committed, so that's why I didn't touch on it. If there's any proceeds that are still remaining, we're just waiting for the disbursements to go out the door.
Yeah, what page was that? It was a new chart. It wasn't your old chart, and I like the new chart, but I can't find the
42
page. 42
are you
looking at page 42, Marty?
Let's just look. 42, student loan, new chart. Yes, that's the one. That's, I think, relatively new way of presenting it, which I think is very nice and very clear.
Yeah, I think I may have provided it once or twice in the past. But yeah, just comparing disbursements to the cash flow assumptions, right. You'll note that the actual disbursements exceed the cash flow assumptions because in my data here, I'm using the gross data and I'm not including any refunds that have come in. But the long story short of it is that we have used all of the 2022, used or committed all of the 2022B proceeds.
Good. Thank you.
All right, anytime.
Thank you, Josh. Shannon, marketing update, marketing
report. Yep, hi everybody. So just gonna go over this quickly. So page 58 is just an overview of CT dollars and cents. Obviously our continued goal across the board is just to bring awareness of our services that we provide and across the board for CT dollars and cents based off the stats below. We have increased visitors and we have obviously them spending more time based off of the session duration and their the reduced inbounds rate from the site, but their visitors are spending more time on the website. Page 59. Same thing with the CHESLA website. We saw an overall increase in new visitors and page views, and then the bounce rate decreased, which to me is just a semblance of all the marketing and people spending more time engaging and using our site for its resources. And then the last page, our second to last page, marketing outreach. I would say this year has been our busiest in regards to outreach. So I think coming out of the pandemic, we've increased the amount of times we've gone out to college fairs, conferences, et cetera. So this just lists a couple of places we've gone, towns we've gone to. Josh said it before, we sponsored and participated in the Hartford Athletics Annual STEM Education Day on the 23rd with over 2,500 middle school and high school students that were in attendance, which was a great event. And then we just continue our outreach on multiple different platforms. And then the last slide just highlights a couple of high level or high impact sporting events that we were able to be a part of. The Celtic versus the Heat's NBA Game 6, we almost didn't make it, but we did. NBA playoffs, a Red Sox Yankees game on ESPN Sunday night. And then we are an upcoming sponsor and have an advertisement in the Travelers Golf Tournament. And that's it. If there's anybody questions for me?
Shannon, I have a quick question for you. If you could go back to the previous slide.
Yep.
You're the bottom section there. You talk about non-skippable ads.
Yes.
So for someone who's very non-techie like myself, is that an ad that pops up and tries you might, you can't close the window?
Yeah, it's usually in like an in-stream kind of content. So if you're watching a TV show or watching a short long form video, like a, you know, a 5 minute video, an ad pops up and you cannot exit out of it or you can't pause it or skip over it. That is what it's pertaining to. So you have to watch it or close it.
So we're running some of those non-skippable ads.
We are, or you could close the content you're watching, but usually you want to watch what you want to watch. So you'll watch our ad.
Yeah. I know. That's all I'll say. I know. Okay.
I would say, Shannon, this is a remarkable program that you're running and have conceived, and it really is miles different than 3 years ago or 5 years ago. So kudos for being so creative.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Shannon. Prior to the board meeting, the Audit Finance Committee met, and primary item of business was reviewing the upcoming fiscal year's operating budget. Marty Budd chaired the meeting, and I'll turn it over to Marty for a review of the meeting to inform the full board of our actions.
If I could, I wanted to ask Josh Herlock one more question about the 2023 proceeds. Have any of that been put out yet?
So the loans are being committed. So people are applying for the 635 rate, and we're starting to commit the applications. We're in the middle of peak season now, so you'll see more applications coming as well.
All right, because we have no data on that here. And also, have we used any of our balance sheet to make those 635 loans?
No, we had previously committed while we were waiting for the bond deal to close. We still had the application open at the 549 rate. So we have committed some funds for this upcoming academic year at the 549 rate.
And you've put those loans in this, in the resolution.
Right.
And Marty, I'm sorry, this is Tim Webb Hilltop. Marty, just to make you at ease, when we ran the cash flows, there was the presumption that $2 million that was going to be used to reimburse the authority, that those loans at the 549 would be going into the trust.
And they did.
Yes.
Well, what we've dispersed has gone, what we have dispersed out the door. There's still dollars that have been committed that for the upcoming year will typically disperse in, say, September and then January. So we'll continue to reimburse ourselves as more of that $2 million actually gets dispersed.
Thank you. Okay, going back to our chair, Peter, I thought our committee had to make a recommendation to the board with respect to the budget. The board had to act on the budget. Is that incorrect?
No, that's correct. I think the process typically is if you can review our discussion and the actions, and that is put forward to be adopted by the the recommendation is put forward to be accepted or adopted by the full board.
Thank you. Now, has the full board received copies? I thought I vaguely recollect that when Carly sent out the budget,
you
also included all the board members.
Marty, when I sent out the audit finance committee package, all board members were included as an FYI.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I'll give the bottom line is, that the committee recommends to the board adoption of the budget as presented. There were some discussion. One of the things that the chairman of the board discussed was a significant amount of money in the budget for revising the website. And it was explained to us that our website, while it functions well, use some refreshing, become more user-friendly, and make room on it for new programs. So that seemed to be a good explanation for the extensions. Also, our executive director discussed the compensation increases in some detail and compared them to other state, well, to state employees, non-union. So we had a full discussion about those two big items, the increase in compensation and the increase in our various functions we just heard about, as well as our website. And we found both of those suggestions made a lot of sense. Also, the memo that was presented by the staff, which you've all gotten, I thought was extremely well done and gave in detail information about each aspect of the budget. So I'll move adoption of the budget as the staff presented.
Okay. And that's what I was at the meeting. I'm happy to second it. So the motion has been made.
I should mention, Peter, this was the recommendation of the whole committee.
That's correct. That's correct. So the motion's been made and seconded to accept the Audit Finance Committee's recommendation to adopt or accept the fiscal 24 budget. Are there further questions or comments for either the chair of that committee or myself or Jeanette? Any questions or comments with regard to the budget that is being proposed for adoption? Questions, comments? Okay, well, hearing none, the motion's been made and seconded to accept the Audit Finance Committee's recommendation to adopt the fiscal 24 budget. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you all very much. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Marty, for chairing that meeting. Is there any other business to be brought before the group? Anything for the good of the cause? Anything? Well, hearing none, I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second?
I'll second, Julie.
Any discussion, comments, or objections? Hearing none, all those in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you.